you look at Steve Jobs, you know, he's got a firm destination in his life to put a dent in the universe. But at the age of 30, he's fired from Apple. He goes over here, starts Next Computers, and then he becomes the CEO of Pixar. So then around this time, Apple's about to go out of business. They've got no other play in the playbook. So they go, ah, got to bring Steve back. Let's just roll the dice. Steve comes back, much better leader because of his time at Pixar. And then they use some of the software they developed at Next in the MacBooks. So at the time of his death, they had the largest market cap of any company in the world and arguably changed our behavior, both good and also bad, with the invention of the iPhone, probably more than anybody else changed our behavior, more than anyone else in the world. And so he made that dent in the universe. He reached his firm destination.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super
you.
Hey everybody, this is Andrew from Equal Man. Eric was recently featured on Joseph Jaffe's amazing Corona TV, and we wanted to share their conversation here on our Super You show. We also just want to let you know, Jaffe's Corona TV is on every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can find out more about the show by visiting www.jaffejuice.tv. Thank you, Joseph, and thank you to all of our Super You listeners. Enjoy the show.
How are you doing, Eric? Welcome to the show.
No, it's great to be here, and thanks for the kind comments, Bob. I appreciate it. No, it's good to see you, Joseph. Awesome to be here.
We actually got a few comments. First of all, Chip said, if the focus today is focused, does that mean I can't be doing other work while I'm listening? I guess it depends on how well he multitasks, right?
Well, we can get into that. Most of us can't multitask. He's using two parts of the same brain. He's using the same brain there, so... If you're doing a physical task, if you're folding laundry, you can do that. Or if you're cleaning up, go for it. If you're trying to write an email, don't do it. You can't.
And you know, and Chip is not a spring chicken either, you know. So he's not one of those Gen Zers or Zoomers or, you know, younger millennials. So too bad, Chip. Focus on us right now. Focus on us. Where do I begin with you? How about we begin at the beginning, which is when we met? Back in the day when we actually went to events, we were in Paris together. We were presenting at the Louvre. Good times, right?
Great times. I mean, present at the Louvre, can't beat it.
And then I've had Graham Codrington on the show as well. We had that dinner, and it was so awesome because, you know, we ended up just the speakers, three or four of us together at one table. And it was like such a treat just to like pick each other's brains and, you know, compare notes and, you know, war stories. And it was a tremendous evening. I remember it very well.
Yeah, and hopefully we can get back to that. I mean, you can imagine we're just having a nice dinner in Paris, a couple speakers sharing ideas. So it was amazing.
Chip says attacking your audience. That's a new tactic. Well, Chip, I don't regard you as audience. I regard you as family. You're part of the community. So, you know, and if we're brothers, for example, don't brothers bully each other or get bullied? So, you know, he's got a thick skin. He's going to be okay. All right. So, listen, let's talk about some fun facts about you because, I mean, you're the first guest that I couldn't actually superimpose the head on the image because I couldn't quite, I don't know, the stories themselves to me were too interesting to actually like have to detract. So we're going to start off with this story. I show that. What do you think? What do you think the story is, Eric, about you?
I like this. This is like the pyramid game, right? We need Dick Clark here and we'll make it happen. But no, the tooth story is, and you can see it right here. My daughters, it's great having young kids because they always speak the truth. And so like, Daddy, why are your teeth a different color down there? But if you look closely, if you're near me in person, it's hard to see.
All right. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Your teeth
right here. There's a couple teeth that are missing. The short version of that is that, so I was at college. I got cut from my high school basketball team as a junior. So very much like Michael Jordan, that's the only thing we share in common. But when I got to Michigan State University, we were ranked the number one team in the country. But I got cut from my high school basketball team, but I still had a dream to play college basketball. So I didn't let that dream die, and I kept working out. I actually became the manager of the team. So that's always talked to, whether you're 18 or 80, I say, you know, just get involved. Like, just take that first step. As crazy as that dream might be, just keep going down that path. So I hadn't let the dream die. And so as the manager, which is the water boy, basically, and I kept working out, putting on weight, working out afterwards. And then my junior year, occasionally, a couple of the players get injured. They're hurt because there's only 13 guys on the team. That once or twice a year, they're like, Qualman, we need you to get in there. Like, we don't have guys to practice. And so at this point, looking back, I was already probably good enough to make the team as a junior, but I didn't have the confidence to make the team. And I go, this is my moment. Like, I'm going to prove that I should be on the team. And I'm having an amazing scrimmage. I go, this is it. They're going to see this guy's better than the other guys on the bench. And then all of a sudden, I took an errant elbow to my mouth. Now, I was born with a couple teeth missing, so I had a fake tooth already in there. So when I got hit in the mouth, I thought it was just the fake tooth that had gotten dislodged because something came out of my hand.
But that would have been lucky, right? That would have been lucky.
Yeah, no. So I keep playing because I put this kind of down. I go, this is my moment. I'm not going to let this moment slip. And I keep playing. About 15 minutes later, the trainer comes up and the trainer goes, you got to go to the dentist. I'm like looking at your teeth, Qualman, and you're missing like two sockets here. And so I won't go into the details because it's a little gross, but anyways, I'm on my way to the dentist, and the whole time I'm thinking, I can't believe this happened to me. But looking back, I realized that it happened for me, because the next day at practice, Coach Tom Izzo, and then those that don't follow basketball, he's now in the Hall of Fame. He's still coaching. But he goes, Qualman, I don't know if you're the toughest guy I know or the dumbest guy I know, but I think you're kind of a little bit of both. And I didn't realize it at the time. But then the next year I made the team, it's because Izzo loves like these grinders. And that's true in business too. It's like those that continue to grind. And so I realized that that happened for me. If I didn't get my teeth knocked out, I wouldn't have made the team, and I wouldn't have gotten that scholarship eventually for being on the team. And so I always say, you know, I was really fortunate and lucky. One of the best things that ever happened to me was getting my teeth knocked out that led to a college scholarship.
There were two beautiful insights in that story, right? Obviously, the last thing you said, it didn't happen to you, it happened for you. Everything happens for a reason. But I really loved what you said at the beginning, which is just get involved. Just get your foot in the door, but maybe not even the door you think that foot should be in. But just being around, at least it gives you an opportunity, if there is going to be an opportunity, to take and see what happens. And I think that's a beautiful story to share with people who are struggling maybe to break through or break in.
Yeah, I mean, just don't sit there. I mean, you can look at, there's a lot of examples of that, whether it's Puff Daddy, you know, volunteering for Russell Simmons, but it's really just for free. And you'll see that a lot from successful people. They volunteered their time for free to someone that they respected and a thought leader that they knew.
All right. So there's one more that I just saw and I thought you have to like share this with us. Apparently, and actually I saw in the video clip, you and former President Obama together, because I was actually looking for a clip, but you apparently made President Obama almost pee his pants from laughter. So I just have to ask you about that circumstance.
Yeah, no, before we get into that, obviously we're kind of in an election cycle, so some people get ramped up about politics. But I always say, if you have the chance to meet the president, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or somewhere in between, and I'm an independent voter, that you're going to meet that person. My parents are like hardcore on one side. They're like, what are you doing? But it was awesome. So I found myself in the same room with Obama because he was down to give a speech at South by Southwest, which is one of the biggest tech conferences in the world in Austin, Texas. And I happened to be speaking as well. And so randomly we're in the same room, but there's a lot of people in this kind of back room. And I could tell I'm looking across the way, and I obviously want to meet the president of the United States, but you've got to kind of, it's different than a regular networking event because there's Secret Service. And so you got to kind of pick and choose how this is going to go down, when your moment is, don't blow the moment. And so I'm looking at everyone, can kind of hear, I'm close enough to hear some things going on. And everyone's saying the same thing, you know, thank you, Mr. President, shake his hand. And I mean, after a while, I'm sure this gets quite boring for the president, because it's the same thing. He's standing there over and over. And so I'm thinking, what? And I do this when I speak, and I know you do this as well, is how do I put myself in that other person's shoes? And so I go, what is he like? And I go, well, I know he loves basketball. And again, we just went over a story. I played basketball. I was fortunate to play basketball at Michigan State. And Obama always filled out the March Madness brackets. And he picked Michigan State a couple times. And every time he picked us, we did a lot worse than we were supposed to do. Like, he picked us to win the whole thing. And so when I got up there, basically I said, you know, Izzo just told me, don't pick us ever again in that pool. And it wasn't that funny, but since everything else was always the same, that kind of allowed him to burst out laughing. I just so happened got lucky that someone was there with a camera that was able to capture that moment of laughter. And then he'd been drinking a lot of water. So that's why I said, like, it almost made him pee his pants. And so it's just one of those moments. I guess the takeaway for the audience is always try to put yourself in the other person's shoes.
I took a whole bunch of other things from that too. Well, first of all, this is the same coach, right?
It's the same coach. Yeah, he's been there forever.
But it's the same coach that gave you your chance, right?
Yes,
So something that happened in your life. Now, this idea of volunteering, if not for that, if not for the connection, you might not have figured out that little quip or that little line to use. But there's also, in this case, the beauty of randomness, right? You happen to be in the room. You got an opportunity. You took the opportunity. You made it count. You ran with it. And you were also able to mold it quite beautifully into, well, he happened to have been drinking water, so therefore he almost peed. And I think, you know, for me, the great takeaway there, Eric, is we don't get many chances in life to work on our reel, right? To work on our credentials, our sizzle. I mean, we all personally have a sizzle reel, whether we have one or not, but you've been able to almost craft yours with these moments of serendipity that make you interesting.
Yeah, it's been a right place, right time. That's why they always say, I'm not the first one to say it. Everyone always says that where luck meets preparation. And sometimes we're not even prepared. Like, you're in that room and it happens. It's sometimes play the riskier play, right? Don't be the person saying, hey, thank you, saying the same thing. It's like, all right, risk. They don't call it reward. It's risk reward. Because that could have ended poorly, right? I could have been laughing and then no one else is laughing. It worked out well.
So I actually have an Obama story, and I had the line and I blew it because I froze. So I went to an evening where I wasn't even meant to get close to meeting him. It was a fundraiser, you know, and I think I came in at the peanut gallery, you know, entry level, which basically put me almost at the back. But I weaseled my way forward to the point where I was almost a handshake away. And at the end of his speech, I got a chance to shake his hand. I think I got a photo. I got a photo of maybe not the two of us, but certainly him up close. And this was going to be my line, which is, I've only voted in two elections in my life. One was for Nelson Mandela and one was for you. And I blew it. Because I was just like, but that was my line. That was my moment in my line.
Did you say anything, or what happened there?
I think the words he might have thought they were Swahili. Whatever I said, I probably just said, it's great to meet you or something, you know. But anyway, so that was, Bob asks, I wonder if your photographer was Pete Souza, White House photographer. Who knows? Not mine.
No, that's good. I'm not sure, Bob.
We don't know. All right. So now let's talk about being an opportunist and being able to forge your own path. I love the story. I think you are one of the best personal branding success stories that I've ever come across. And I'll set you up. Your name is Eric Quellman. When you put Eric Quellman together, specifically the E of Eric with Quellman, it forms the word Equal Man. And suddenly, and I'm just going to go full screen for a moment, as you can see, this beautiful logo is born, which is Equal Man. And then I just lost focus. I got so excited. Tell me about your origins, your personal branding origin story, because there are colors involved, there are shapes, there are symbols. It doesn't just fall into your lap like that. I mean, Jay Jaffe, that doesn't mean anything, but Equal Man means something. I would love for you to share that story. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And this story, I'm going to tell it because I really do believe we're all living the same movie, but we're just different actors and actresses. And so I think this will be helpful for everyone to step into your story, whatever that story might be. And honestly, it took me 12 to 15 years to fully step into my true story. And so if you look at, we just talked about, it's Equal Man, forms the name Equal Man. So for a long time, I used to get quote unquote, like picked on or bullied, not to that extent, but just at work, it's like, hey, Equal Man can do it. He's a superhero. He can go get the coffee. Or, oh, we need someone to work the weekend. Equal Man can do it. He's super strong. And so after a while, you kind of like, enough of that. But I didn't realize that it was, again, happening for me, not to me. And one of the books, Digital Leader, was doing well. And so when I did an interview with them, the magazine wanted to do a cover shot. And they said, we'd love for you to wear some Clark Kent-like Superman glasses because of your, you know, equalman.com, because your email address. We'd love for you to kind of wear these glasses. And they go, St. Patrick's Day is coming up, so do you mind if they're bright green? And I go, no, let's do it. Let's have some fun. And I don't think much of it. And then I fly to Kenya to give a talk. And the night before, I'm going to adopt a baby cheetah, not to take home, you know, my wife would kill me, but just to kind of help the local area. And on the way over, I'm with this lady and she goes, you know, the sprinter, Usain Bolt, adopted from the same litter that you're going to adopt from here tonight. And he was here a couple of days ago. So we filmed him and we'd love to film you and kind of put the video together so that we can raise more money for the shelter. And I go, of course, yeah, anything we can do, let's make it happen. And then she kind of pauses and then she looks at me and she goes, but obviously when we're filming, we want to make sure you have your iconic green glasses on. And I look at her and I go, oh, I don't wear those around all the time. I look like an idiot walking around wearing these bright green glasses all the time. And then the look on her face, I never wanted to see that look again. And so I've been stuck, kind of, I say stuck wearing the green glasses. But again, things happen for you, not to you. And another reason I tell you this story is because once I got back to the States and started wearing the green glasses, you know, I didn't fully step into it. I'd wear them on my head. I'd have them kind of so I didn't have to have them on all the time. Kind of like here and there, I'd put them on. But then now I wear them all the time. But again, I tell that story because I think we're all living the same movie. In the short version, the Cliff Notes version, step into your story. So fully step into it. And once I did, it's uncomfortable at first. It's kind of weird. Like the most uncomfortable place you can be is actually the first time you step into your story. But the most comfortable place you can be long-term is actually stepping into it, fully into it. And so that's what we've done. And now, I mean, you've got the logo behind there. We've got the glasses. Sometimes conferences now buy like thousands of these pairs of glasses. And I couldn't even make all this stuff up. Now it's 2020. We launched the Focus book. You can see it behind me, like the glasses. And so again, another reason why things happen for you, not to you, but a long story to say that my cheetah is much faster than Usain Bolt's cheetah. But also too, is that just step in your story today, whether you're 18 or 80, just step into your story. You know what that is, just fully step into it.
And Chris Ahrens is here and he's just saying, Qualman.
Oh, no way. Yeah, Chris is awesome. We work together. Oh, man, he's the best. That's great. What a small world.
Yeah, he is the best.
Here's at Freestyle Interactive. We're doing some cool stuff back in the day. So that's awesome.
Wait, so you were at Freestyle or you just were connected?
He was at Freestyle. So we were partners. And so we're doing some cool stuff at Earthlink at the time.
Yeah. Well, I remember a lot of the Freestyle people, you know, from Corey and I mean, that.
Yeah,
that
Corey. Yeah. They're great people.
That whole team was amazing. Yeah. And maybe Chris will even join us in the Zoom after show to hang out he didn't call you Equal Man. He called you Qualman. I love the story. And of course, for people that don't know, Eric's glasses are not lensed. In fact, are there even lenses in there?
There's no, I wear contact lenses, and it's kind of one of those Hollywood things that you learn over time is that.
You could, there's nothing.
There's nothing in here. Yeah, there's nothing in here. I could, right there. There you go.
Isn't that great?
So, there's nothing in there. So your glasses are very clean. Congratulations. It's hard to do. But when you're on stage, it can cause refraction. Some of the photos look better. But I do have to be careful. Unfortunately, I'm quite tall. Like I always say, I'm close to a little over 6'6 on a sunny day. And so it's only happened twice where someone's actually got the eye. But at these book signings, you've got to be careful because people won't think about it. And they'll go like, are there any lenses in there? And they just reactively kind of stick their finger up there.
So you get a finger in the eye, yeah. Tooth punched out.
There you go.
You know what I loved about this story. And by the way, did you notice that little bit of Equal Man product placement? Do the subtle drink again. So everyone brands.
Yeah, you got to put the straw on the side. You got to remember that.
And the straw is green as well. Is that a coincidence?
On a good
not?
Day, if we could remember, yes, we got the green straw.
But I mean, so. There's quality, there's consistency, there's the idea of everyone and everything brands. But I loved what you said. I had no idea that the green glasses had to do with Clark Kent and St. Patrick's Day. But I think there's another thing as well, Eric, which is just, you know, just being a sport, just going along, rolling with it, you know, just instead of fighting it and resisting it and fearing what might happen, it could, in your case, which it did, was create your entire powerful differentiated branding platform. It's an amazing story.
No, thank you. And I got to preface it too to let people know that when you step into that story at first, it can cause, it's not all rainbows and unicorns, as my daughters and I like to say, is that we lost some business because you can imagine, Joseph, there's a client that's like, well, we want someone more serious than that. But long-term, it actually gains more clients because you never want to just be in the middle. So that taught me that you don't want to be in the middle, that it's okay to be over here, over there, but you don't want to be, that guy's okay. That girl's okay. You want to kind of have, okay, yeah, we want that person because they want fun. We want some energy. And then you give up some deals. And that was hard for me at first to learn, but then realizing long-term, oh yeah, that's a much better place to be. And of course I should have known that as a marketer. You don't really want to be in the middle.
Exactly. And you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking, you've got to be all in, right? You've got to be all in with what you do. And I was thinking back, you know, my personal brand, if that, Jaffe Juice, and I'm pretty much Jaffe Juice on every platform, you know, my domain, Get the Juice. I haven't embraced, first of all, it also came serendipitously. You know, I was approached by iMedia to write a weekly column. And it was Rick Parkhill, who runs iMedia, who was like, hey, let's brand the column. I'm like, okay. And he was like, well, let's come up with a name for it. Like Joseph's this or Joseph Jaffe or Jaffe. I think it was him who said, how about Jaffe Juice? I said, okay. Like, I was like, that's fine. I once gave a talk and what they wanted to do was provide Jaffe Juice for everyone. And it was like a shot of tequila with Tabasco, you know. And I was thinking to myself, like, I need to go back to that. I need to go back to being kind of all in with Jaffe Juice. Well, now it's Corona Juice. I don't know. I'm confused. You know what I mean.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's sort of what he said. Go all in. And then there's going to be learnings, right? And it's not going to be pretty at first, but over time, it's the best place to be. It's funny. I just realized this because people always ask me, like, what are some of the favorite things that have happened? One thing happened last year was my kids' school, which is a big school district here in Austin, was doing a kindness campaign. So to help kick off the year, I spoke alongside the superintendent. It's called Convocation. I didn't know what a convocation was, but it basically is their entire school district, the bus drivers to the school teachers to everybody, and the principals. And so he goes, do you mind if we use the green glasses as a reminder of kindness throughout the year? And so they got glasses for everyone in the district. But I tell that story because it's hilarious, because to this day, it's so funny when I'm out and about town, someone will come up to me and go, oh, what grade do you teach? You know, because they're for this local area. It's like, oh, you must be an Eanes teacher. That's the name of the school district. You must be one of the teachers in the school. So it's been kind of fun and funny.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to give you a quick update. The Focus Project, my brand new book, is out. It's available. So go to Amazon, type in The Focus Project. It was set to launch in October. We moved it forward because so many of you DM'd me, texted me, tweeted me, emailed me saying, hey, I have a friend. I have a family member. They're really struggling during quarantine. They're having a tough time with all the things they can't control. They're letting fear set in. They can't focus on the most important things in life. So that's why we've moved the book forward. The Focus Project. Don't make me regret it. The publishers think I'm crazy because you always launch books in October, not in the summer. But I said, hey, look, this is a whole new time. This is something we've never dealt with. We need to get this in the people's hands so that it can help them. So again, check it out, The Focus Project. And thanks again for all your support.
Tom Morris said he's a friend of the show's previous guest on the show. He said he's a philosopher, but I think he needs to find a toga. Again, you will lose a couple of gigs, but long term, you will lose more gigs.
No. And I love that he brought up the toga. So a lot of you listeners might know this, but Cato, one of these Stoics, used to wear the unpopular color robe to kind of teach himself to walk in discomfort. And that's been another byproduct of the glasses, is it trains me to walk in discomfort. And obviously, when you're showing your weight loss, you know, your physical regime, is that growth doesn't happen unless you push the boundaries, right? And whether it's your training, losing weight, is you got to push yourself to that uncomfortable level. And so one byproduct, and it's not any reason why I wore the green glasses in the first place, but it's taught me to kind of walk in that discomfort with green glasses. And so there's ways you can do that as individuals. It might be you call someone today that you haven't talked to in 3 years, and that first 5 minutes will be uncomfortable, but then the rest of the 45-minute conversation will be wonderful. It could be you get up when we're back in the new norm. I know Starbucks is somewhat open, but when you get up to the front of the line at Starbucks, it's asking for that 10% discount. And so the reason you want to train yourself to walk in discomfort is it teaches you to grow, but also it makes every other hard decision a little more comfortable. And then yeah, I brought that up because of the robes, because the Stoics, Cato, learned that, and he'd walk around sometimes even without a tunic or a robe on as well. But a lot of times it was just the non-popular color robe of the time.
And get a good breeze.
Yeah, there you go.
So I'm going to flip our script a little bit, and we're going to talk about your latest project and talk about focus, because I think it's such an important, powerful message. And then if there's time left over, and I can make sure there is, I'll talk about a certain piece of content that you created that's proven to be quite popular through the ages that, I'd never known who was behind it, but turns out it was you. But let's talk about specifically the latest, the Focus Project. Why did you decide? I mean, you focused on leadership and digital leadership and innovation. Why did you decide to, excuse the pun, but focus on focus?
It's what I was challenged with. It's what I was wrestling with. So I'd kind of get excited thinking about, could I take on, I read Gretchen Rubin's The Happiness Project, and then the wheels started turning. Man, what would it be like if I just focused on speaking for a month rather than trying to do all these things at once, juggling these balls all at once? Or what would it be like if I organized my house for a month, just like dedicating a certain amount of time per day? And so once we figured it out, I was like, okay, what can I dedicate? What could the average person dedicate to focus? I'm like, okay, 30 minutes a day, minimum to 2 hours to pick something once per month. With the rub being, I was going to test all these theories, whether it was essentialism, whether it was stoicism, whether it was this research that said this is how you focus or this is what you eat. And so I was going to serve as like the Sherpa or the guinea pig, like a guide or the tester of all this stuff. And so that was the genesis of it. And then once I had the idea, I go, well, does anyone really care about this? And so fortunately, as I was traveling speaking, I would ask whether it was a superintendent of school, was a stay-at-home dad, or whether it was a CEO, you're successful, what's behind that success? And they'd say, well, I can focus a little bit better than most. I go, what's your biggest challenge? And they'd say, trying to stay focused. So I go, okay, everyone's kind of wrestling with this. This is long before the pandemic We did move the book forward a couple months, which, as you know, is super hard to do to launch it because so many people are struggling mentally during this pandemic with focus. So written and done before there's any sign of a pandemic, but then it's been really helpful for the readers. Just how do I focus in this unfocused world, or the subtitle being the not so simple art of doing less better?
So there are a few key ideas. I was thinking of like the 4-day work week, right? I was thinking of this idea of don't work harder, work smarter, where truly less is more. I think a lot of those messages are converging in this book. But why is it so important now in a global pandemic to shed, you know, to actually not sweat the small stuff and focus on the stuff that counts?
Yeah, it's interesting. Unfortunately, I mean, we've learned living it firsthand is that our kids are at home for homeschooling. Now they're going back half days, and if fingers crossed, they'll be back full live next week. But all of a sudden, what's been thrown on your plate? Oh, I got to homeschool my kids while I'm also learning to work from home. Okay, so now I'm working from home. Now I'm homeschooling the kids. Now I've got to order everything online. So all this stuff that we're not accustomed to is thrown at us at once, and it's very overwhelming. And so the key is to always control what you can control. So that was a big learning for me. And it's funny, it goes back to whether you're learning to play instruments or whether it's sports, it's like you got to control what you can control. And so all this chaos that's happening around us, it's just the constant reminder, be firm in your destination, but flexible in your path. There's going to be that external challenge, in this case, a pandemic, other things come up daily. And so it's waking up with the mindset. We sat down with the CEO that she's quite successful. And she goes, on my 52nd birthday, I woke up and my mindset the first 51 years was, I hope nothing bad happens today. Like, I hope there's not that many challenges. And then she goes, I don't know why it took me 51 years to realize this, but that day has never arrived. That day has not happened yet. So now I'm flipping my mindset to where I'm going to embrace those challenges because it's going to keep the competition out. And I know they're coming. It's going to make me stronger. I'm going to go around them, and then I'm going to keep getting to my firm destination. It's not going to be a linear path. And so that's one of the key takeaways is control what you can control. And I say at the front of the book as well, as I go, a lot of this stuff isn't necessarily earth-shattering and new, but it's like, how do we do it? And so that's why I grade myself each month like a kid. I give myself A, B, C, D, E, and F. And I only got 2 A's out of the 12 months. And so focus is really, really hard. But it can be learned. It can become a habit. And so that was the beautiful thing that we learned through the process, that it's super powerful. And we've got some data to show that for some of the months. But it's really hard to stay focused.
So before I get into responding to that, my son, whose birthday it was, Aaron, he's just finished now, but for several years he played soccer for a premier team called Beachside. The motto of Beachside was control the controllables. Very, very similar. And I think it's just a powerful, powerful message, which is there is so much in our lives right now that we have little to no control over. What are you going to do, like, when you cannot actually impact or affect or influence that? The only thing to do is focus on what you can, in fact. And I think going back to your story when your teeth were knocked out is by doing that, by being in control of yourself and the things that you can, in fact, influence, that leads to bigger and better things that maybe previously would have been one of those uncontrollables. But that's the bridge, I think, Eric, between the controllable and the uncontrollable.
No, I love that. I love the motto. And more so than ever, that's why we moved the book forward, because the pandemic, there's so many more uncontrollables. And so it's keeping that same mindset and moving forward. It's basically plan for everything, predict nothing during this time. So plan for everything, but predict nothing. Is just, especially in this pandemic, is kind of keep moving forward. And then the research shows, not anything earth shattering again, but if you look at like a long jumper, that their shortest stride is right before that giant leap. And so these small steps do lead to big actions. And so another learning is just persistence in the short term, but patience in the long term. So persistence in the short term and patience in the long term. And as you look around, there's just, to me, it was a fascinating research model because you could pull from so many different worlds in terms of focus. So if you look at Warren Buffett, the most influential book for him in investing had everything to do with baseball. It was about Ted Williams, the greatest baseball hitter of all time. And Ted Williams, long before big data, long before all this technology, he would like let a strike go by because he goes, if I swing it, I know it's a strike, but if I swing at that pitch, I'll bat 235 rather than batting the 1 year he batted 400. It's like, I know that that's a strike, but I've got to let that go by. And so Warren took that same philosophy in investing and he goes, there's a lot of good pitches. And he goes, the good thing is people aren't yelling at me like a baseball player. Why aren't you swinging, you bum? And Warren would say, I can let pitch after pitch go by that might be a hit for someone else, but it's not in my sweet spot. So I'm going to wait for those that are in that circle of competence is what he says. And so Ted Williams applied it to baseball. Then Warren stole that after he read the book and said, yeah, I got to let that pitch, even though it's a strike for, it's going to be called strike. I'm going to bat 235 if I swing at those. So I'm going to stay in my zone circle of competence.
We've got lots of interesting builds here. Leslie said, is this the right way to reframe? Be firm with your goal and flexible with your approach. What do you think about that, Eric?
Yeah, I like that. That's great. And I was, it's funny if you look at like Steve Jobs or as at Raytheon. So Raytheon's a company that put us on the moon essentially with their guidance systems. We were only on track 3% of the time as we headed toward the moon. So the smartest people in the world, these rocket scientists, it was always course correction, right? And so that's life. And I love that, Leslie, that's a good way to reframe it. If you look at Steve Jobs, you know, he's got a firm destination in his life to put a dent in the universe. But at the age of 30, he's fired from Apple. He goes over here, starts Next Computers, and then he becomes the CEO of Pixar. So then around this time, Apple's about to go out of business. They've got no other play in the playbook. So they go, got to bring Steve back. Let's just roll the dice. Steve comes back, much better leader because of his time at Pixar. And then they use some of the software they developed at Next in the MacBooks. So at the time of his death, they have the largest market cap of any company in the world and arguably changed our behavior, both good and also bad, with the invention of the iPhone, probably more than anybody else changed our behavior more than anyone else in the world. And so he made that dent in the university, reached his firm destination.
I have a small build on what Leslie was saying as well. I found this study, which I actually incorporated when I wrote Built to Suck, but it's the difference between what's called causal and effectual reasoning and thinking. It really is the difference between the way corporate executives think and the way that entrepreneurs think. So one is convergent and the other one is divergent. And that kind of focuses on the idea of, I know where I want to get, I know where I want to get to, but how I get there, I mean, it's anything can happen along the way. So I thought that was a good build. And I got a few more comments. LinkedIn user, that's an interesting one. When I normally see an anonymous comment, I'm like, no, but this one says, plan for everything but predict nothing, right? Lowered expectations or be ready for anything. I think that's just over to you.
Yeah, I would say just be ready for everything as much as you can. I mean, you've got to be focused. So you're going to give up on certain things where you go, I'm just not going to be good at that. Or you know your strengths. And so it's like, I know I'm weak in that area, so I'm just not going to do that. And that's the key is being okay with that. And so before I hopped on here, I heard you guys conversing about the to-do list, which you brought up, Joseph, which is great. And so one of the things that I see audiences lean into, even before the pandemic, when I'm on stage, where we're talking about focus or digital leadership, and they really lean in. That's one of the top takeaways when I get all the emails, like this is what I've been using since I heard you speak, is embracing a not to-do list. So over 90% of us make to-do lists, but only 4% of us make a not to-do list. And digital leaders index very high on making not to-do lists because they've figured out, they understand that our brain, the way our brain works, is that your brain's going to try to complete any unfinished task. And so if you have a to-do list with 15 items, and let's say you're having a good day and you're focused on number one, which most of us don't do. We focus on the immediate rather than the important, But let's say you're having a good day and you're focused on number one. Your brain is thinking about number 15. Even though you don't think you are, your brain is using processing power because it's an uncompleted task. So one of the easiest ways for us to make our life simpler is actually to start with a not to-do list. Here's what I am not going to do today, or here's what I'm not going to do this year. And so it's really about trying to flatten that out. And we're actually talking to someone this week. They're in a small business and they had a coach come in, and the small business owner is talking about, all right, what are your niche? The consultant's like, what are your initiatives this year? And he goes, I've got these five initiatives. And she goes, how many employees do you have? And he's like, I've got four employees. And she goes, you need to have one initiative. Like, you need to have one initiative. And that's really hard for us to do. What we saw is that you really want to tap out at three. And Jim Collins saw that in his research in Good to Great. But there's a rule of threes. Basically, anywhere over three, you get a little dicey. And so the easiest way is to start with your not to-do list. And
No, I was going to say, I just love the concept of a not to-do list. I mean, just conceptually, like practically, I love it less than just conceptually, is this idea of you know, no, you know, sometimes we're motivated not by what we want, but by what we don't want. Or instead of, you know, some of us are motivated by things we run to, but sometimes we're motivated by things we run away from. It's just a different counterbalance.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were saying.
No, I mean, I think that you're spot on. And it's one of the top learnings from the project that I took on, and which was a book. So we turned it into a book because we knew we were going to do that. But it's, first of all, that successful people, well, first of all, it's a habit, right? Focus is a habit. It can be learned. And so it's hard, but you can actually train yourself to focus better. The second thing is that these very successful people aren't smarter than us. They're not more talented than us. They're actually just much better at saying no than we are. And they have systems and processes in place to do that. If you rely on willpower, it's going to lose. You've got to have the systems and process in place to say no. And so what does that look like? So now when I get a request, before I'd be like, that sounds okay. I should probably do that. Or I should probably do that. If it's that type of mentality, if it's not an emphatic yes, then it should be an emphatic no. And so emphatic yes or an emphatic no. So that means your no's are no's and your yes's are yes's. And so now when I replied, when I can't do something, like when you ask me to do this, that's like emphatic yes. It's no brainer. Let's do it. Other times I'm like, maybe I should do that. It might be good for the book, or it might be good because of X, Y, Z. Now I'm just very succinct and say, look, I'm heads down on this book, or I'm heads down on doing this. I apologize. It sounds like a great opportunity, but it's going to have to be for somebody else. And so that was really hard for me to do. And it's hard for a lot of people because most of us are people pleasers, which actually serves us well most of the time. And going back thousands of years, that's good. You assimilate to the tribe. But in this world, you've got to learn how to say no properly. And so first of all, that's a real helpful tool. Yes, emphatic yes or emphatic no, or no, then it's a no. It's not an emphatic yes, it's a no. And then here's how you can say it quick and say it sharp, that like, hey, I apologize, it's a great opportunity, but I can't do it.
So I want to touch on that a little bit, because you know, one of the things I think I've struggled with, but I've also struggled when people have said no to me, and why they've said no. You've given me certainly some more insight into that, because you know, failure and being rejected is a big part of the entrepreneurial life. So let me go back to that. So when you're on the fence, is that just an automatic no?
It is now. It's an automatic no at the beginning, and I said your no's are no's. But obviously, other times I'm trying to do a request, and I've always said I want to become president of the United States because no one ever gets sick. Like for a lunch meeting with the president of the United States, you're going to make it there, right? There's no excuse why you're not going to get there unless someone dies in your family. But sometimes you can circle back. So it's taught me better too. If I get a no, then I can send a quick note. I go, is it because of lack of time? If so, does this make it easier? And so trying to put myself in their shoes, like what's that no? And trying to guess what that no is so you can provide that solution, A or B. Or then C is, nope, I just can't do it. Like you still give them that out, that it's okay to say out. But yeah, right now I always treat it too. In the book, you'll see that you got to treat your yeses like an inventory. And so my background's more on the e-commerce side. So there's a set amount of inventory. Once you're out, you're out. And so think of those yeses as boxes. And then you've got to store them sometimes, because if you say yes now, that means you're saying no to something in the future. And so that's why it should be an emphatic yes.
It's tough. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, going back to the world, it's amazing how many parallels I'm drawing about the world of startups and entrepreneurship with this. Because, you know, one thing I also got from the whole startup world is a quick no is better than a slow or long yes. And that's another beautiful thing. It's just like, just tell me now, is it yes or no? Like I'd rather you say no to me now than in 3 months' time get to that yes when so many things have changed.
No, you're spot on. I mean, when I was at Yahoo back when they were kind of the Facebook of the day, and it's kind of crazy because this is a fun story, because Seth Godin was at Yahoo at the same time. And most people don't realize that his book, Purple Cow, came because we actually, at the time, there was a fundraiser to do cows like on streets where you paint them. And then so Yahoo was purple. So we painted the Yahoo cow purple, and it was in the lobby. Every day we'd walk in and see this giant purple cow in the lobby, and it stood out. But I'd sit on those sales calls, and those salespeople would say exactly that. And it makes sense that the pipeline report, the one on the fence was killer, because it's just like, no, we're not going to do it. So then I can move on and put my resources to other potential prospects.
I am hating the fact that the time has flown so radically that we're going to have to move over to the Zoom after show. But, you know, with good reason, because there are a whole bunch of interesting points and comments that I've been looking at. Haley, we're not going to answer it right now, but maybe Eric will talk about if you want to come over to the Zoom after show, which, by the way, will be on YouTube as well if you want to come afterwards. There's no bait and switch here. I'm just telling you that we're going to continue the conversation. But I thought there was an interesting conversation about procrastination. And Amy identified herself, by the way, as the anonymous user. Jason came up with an idea for a guest, and he is a former guest. Jason, you just fell into a trap, which is anytime somebody comes up with an idea for a guest on the show, it is now their goal and task to go and pitch that person and deliver them to me on a silver platter. So Jason, you have homework to do, my friend, to get Nate Woodbury to come on the show. Make it easy for me. I'm just kidding, but seriously. So there were some really good comments there. You know what I wanted to do is I wanted to just touch on the final fun fact about you. And basically kind of what we'll do is we'll play out to it. But before we do that, we're just going to play one more game, which is, can you guess the quote? Can you guess who said this? And for you, I picked a really, really awesome one, because I think it just ties back to the whole beginning of the conversation, back to your college days, back to you taking chances and opportunities when they presented themselves. This is the quote: the successful warrior is the average man with laser-like focus. Who said that?
I think it might be the gentleman that had a bit part in Once Upon a Hollywood getting in a fight with Brad Pitt. Was it Bruce Lee?
Damn you. Of course you would have known that.
Yeah. I got lucky. It's in the book. So I got lucky.
Oh, it's actually in the book. You know, there are no coincidences.
But the fact I can remember that was surprised myself. So.
And what was also interesting is Bruce Lee has multiple quotes on focus, which of course is not surprising, because everything he was about was focus from a martial arts standpoint, and acting, quite frankly, but bringing it back to present day and from a business standpoint. So I thought that was interesting. All right. So I found out that there is a certain video, and well, actually, hang on a second. We're going to play out with that. So before we do that, if you want to connect with Equal Man, with the superhero, what I'm calling the focused superhero, check out his website, equalman.com or equalman.com. Follow him on Twitter at equalman.com. How else can people connect with you? And more importantly, anything that you want to share, final few thoughts with the audience, and then I'll set up the video.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on here. Thanks for all the interaction with the audience. This is amazing. And so it's been fun to be here. And if I can help in any way, we're just trying to help entertain, educate, and empower people to the best life so they can inspire others to do the same. So if I can help in any way, it's just Equal Man across the board, easy to find. So hopefully we can help you out.
I'm sure you will. And we're going to go over to the Zoom after show in a moment, but here's what I found out about you. Seth, by the way, said, well done, Eric. Tom said someone stumped the great stumper. Yeah, well, you know. And also Bruce Lee, philosophy student. Everyone is a philosopher. That's what I've learned on the show. And everyone's a marketer. There is a video that circulated online. What I didn't realize is it is the most watched video on the rise and the proliferation and adoption of social media. What I didn't realize is the person behind it is my guest today, Mr. Eric Qualman and his company. I was fascinated by it. And if you work in marketing and advertising and digital and branding, you've definitely played this video or had it played or forced down your throat maybe 100 times. You're like, enough. I know. I don't need to know anymore. I didn't know, but now I do. So we're going to play out the show today with elements of that video. And Eric, please join me in the Zoom after show. It's just been a pleasure catching up with you, my friend.
Pleasure's been mine. Thank you, everyone, for the support. And we'll see you at the Zoom after show.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to today's Super You podcast. This is Equal Man reminding all of us, until next time, it's not what we take from the world. It is what we leave behind.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super You.